Are you tired of the cookie-cutter approach to education that's stuck in the last century? Are you seeking a win-win situation where your family thrives, your kids' education is revolutionary, and you still get to chase your own dreams? Welcome to Unschooled Unleashed. Unlock your child's genius. I'm your host, Matthew Jarecki, an unapologetic rebel dad and promoter of what many consider to be educational anarchy. You know the world isn't going to be won by those that just toe the line. It's the innovators, the visionaries, and the resilient spirits that are going to thrive. Our mission here is to forge those world changers within our very homes with less stress, energy, and time. Unschooled Unleashed starts now. Welcome back to Unschooled Unleashed. I'm your host, Matthew Jarecki, and we have a great episode for you today. We're going to cover how to cultivate curiosity in your children. Us as parents really want to ignite that spark. I think that's one of our main jobs as parents. If you want your kids to thrive, curiosity is going to lead to learning. I really do believe that. And in unschooling, we rely heavily on that because it's child-led and interest-based. So learning is going to happen. Kind of got to get curious. Kind of got to go explore. So listen to this episode if you're looking for ways to kind of get your children, you know, just support your children in building curiosity. And you, I think us as the parents can really, really, really set them up for success by just doing little things along the way. And we're going to cover that today. So with that, let's dive in. Welcome back to another terrific episode of Unschooled Unleashed. I'm your host, Matthew Jarecki, and today we're going to talk about how to cultivate curiosity in your children. We want to ignite that spark. And I think curiosity is very, very important, and that's why we want to do that. And I basically spend, I spend a lot of energy trying to cultivate curiosity and wonder, because I think that's what leads to learning. I think that's what leads to their motivation to learn, especially at this age. Some of the ways I came up with this stuff is just going back in time and looking at life through my own eyes at their ages. And even the way I look at the world now that's benefited me, and just, you know, there's wonder in asking yourself questions on why the world is the way it is, and why the sky changes color at a sunset, or why, I don't know, astronauts on the moon seem to be moving in slow motion. And these things lead to learning, of course, because the first thing I do is pull out my phone or, you know, talk with someone, and I learn a lot. So curiosity, something you definitely want to build. The first way I mean, and this might be the most obvious, the first way I try and ignite that curiosity is I follow the questions. Children's questions are stepping stones to giving them deeper knowledge. So an example of this in my kids' life right now that we're going through is their curiosity about World War II. And part of the reason they had that curiosity about World War II is, part of it was why is the world the way it is today? You know, the structure, why are there borders the way they are today? Going back and tracing through that helped them understand maybe what we're trying to avoid in the future. You know, even talking about current politics of today, you know, global politics, you have to go back to World War II to really understand all this stuff. And that was a really monumental event. So when they were asking questions, I started talking about, here's what happened and all this stuff and da 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 da. And they're just like, oh, that's interesting. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, we got stuff on this documentary over here that can explain it in a lot more detail and give you a lot better picture. And they're like, yeah. And then they dove into history in World War II. So Now we're going to try and find another documentary since we finished up that one. It's hard to find one on World War One. At least I, you know, at a glance, haven't found one. Found more World War II documentaries, so we might do that too. Maybe the Vietnam War, because we started talking about the Cold War, and that might actually be a nice segue, is learning about the Cold War then. We already talked about it once. We talked about Vietnam. We talked about the fall of the Berlin Wall and how significant that was. So, I don't know. To be determined. But take home, we followed the questions. They had questions. I tried to answer them. They wanted to know more. They found it interesting. And we dove in. So there it is. Next item I have is real world teaching moments. Now this might seem obvious too, but how busy are we? We want to take what's happening with us right in the moment, even at the inconvenient times, and restructure that to have it be maybe a natural springboard into learning. So we're going to learn in real time, what we call teachable moments. This is easier said than done, because if you have kids the same age as mine, you know you're running from swim lessons to basketball to dance lessons to whatever else is going on. Even if you're unschooling, it's still, you know, quite a schedule, especially when both my wife and I work and we have to navigate that. So, gosh, you know, it's hard to leave space for those teachable moments, but one of the reasons we unschool is to leave space for those teachable moments. I can't tell you how much we've gone through in the past 2 days, just even the past 24 hours with my one son who's struggling with something, and it's just a life problem, right? It's just like one of those things where, you know, you get stuck in a rut, and it's hard to get out of. He's been in this rut for quite a long time. He might be on the verge of a breakthrough, so we've taken these teachable moments to be able to, or these teachable moments where he's stuck in that rut, he found a problem, and we try and walk through with him, and gosh, sometimes I feel like I'm just not equipped to do this job. I just had so many faults. I let myself slip into fear, and then I respond with sometimes anger or frustration, and I don't let my best sides come out, but fortunately, we do have the time to be able to work through not just, you know, what he's going through, but what I'm going through and reconcile and all that stuff. But even though those important things, it seems like we just don't have time for. But we unschool so we can make time for this stuff. So being able to teach in the moment is very important. A personal example of how I might do this is picture any moment, we're doing something and then my kids ask a question. And, you know, it could be anything. And we just dive into it right then and there. And then we might watch a video over it, about it. You know, and I do this while I'm working. You know, I might be writing this podcast episode and we're pulling up some YouTube videos on it. Or we're doing some experiments on how it works. I know we talked about changing up the chore structure, like how much they get paid and how they get paid is really what it was. And, you know, we voted on it and we talked about democracy and we talked about how to govern these things because it affected them and I wanted them to have a say. Learned about, I guess I'll tell you what it was about. We were talking about chores and people were complaining about, one of my sons was, I think they were complaining about not getting paid as much as the other one. They make the same for the task, but one chose not to do it and the other one chose to do it. Then the other one's upset when he doesn't have the money to be able to buy something that he wants. I think he wanted snacks for his day, that we allow him to eat a whole bunch of snacks if they want. So we started talking about that. I said, well, if you don't work, you don't get paid. And he didn't like that too much, if I recall. So we said, well, we can change the system. I'm like, if you'd like to just, you know, maybe when someone works, we just take a little bit of that money and we give it to each one of you and we just kind of redistribute it. Or maybe I just decide as the ruler of this household what you guys should be doing, and to each to his ability he contributes. And then we just pay you guys the same no matter what. No matter what you contribute, we'll pay the same. You're just going to contribute in your own unique way to your ability. And you could probably see where I'm going with this. That led to a conversation about capitalism versus communism versus socialism. That was fascinating for them. All of them wanted to keep it capitalistic, which I found entertaining, really entertaining. Even the one who wasn't getting paid for doing nothing, he didn't even want to do that. Because he's like, no, I eventually will work and I want to keep my money. And I thought that was hilarious. And by the way, I tried to do this stuff even though I'm a capitalist. I believe in moral capitalism, where if everyone operates with morals in the capitalistic society, in a capitalistic society, and takes care of those in need, not by force, but by choice, I think that that's a pretty fantastic system, and that's what we've had in the United States up until, you know, maybe the past 100 years or so. Anyways, not 100 years, it hasn't been that long, 60 years? Who knows? I don't even know. Either way, I try and present this information as unbiased as possible. And I explain that, well, here in the United States, we live in a semi-capitalistic society. We're probably more capitalistic than the majority of the world. However, we have a lot of socialist policies. And that got us into taxes, and that got us into, you know, how, you know, the role of government. We talked about economies, but essentially, and that just led to more questions and more questions and more questions. Then they understood how communism works. So when we segued eventually, well, we didn't segue directly into it, but eventually we got into World War II, right? And they understood what communism was. They understood what, you know, they're going to understand a lot of what the Cold War is and what the Vietnam War was about, at least in part. It's really interesting. These real world teachable moments, like right in time when it comes about, you know, you just go into it. You have their attention. I think that's really beneficial. Moving on, learning by doing. You're going to spark curiosity by having them do something. These are activities that maybe mimic real life and cement understanding. An example of that might be actually trying to implement some of those, I guess you could call them philosophies, you know, capitalism, communism, or socialism within the household. And actually experiencing it. And then when it doesn't work out the way they want it to, or maybe it really benefits them in some way, it tends to lead to more curiosity than more questions, let's say. Sometimes it leads to a little bit of like, I want things to go back the way they were. Like, why do we have to do this? But when you do something, it tends to lead to more questions than answers, right? If you're a curious person, and when it affects your real life, then you tend to take it pretty seriously, and that's what I see my children doing. So learning by doing is just another way to build up that curiosity in order to catapult into the next or springboard into the next journey. Another way is games. We can do games. turning learning into maybe a sport where the children strive to outdo themselves, or maybe make it a competition between children. I don't like to necessarily do that. I don't like to pit them against one another. I like to pit them against herself. But a little bit of competition, sometimes when the playing field can be leveled, is a lot of fun. An example of competing against herself would be how I make math a competition against herself. Something that's just like, if you can just memorize the multiplication table, you're good to go from there, right? There's no going beyond learning the multiplication table. It's not like you're going to be building upon learning on the multiplication table in itself. Like, you need to memorize something built on that. You're going to use that within it, but essentially that's the end goal, is just to memorize that. So I don't mind rewarding that in that way, but I make it more of a competition, and that builds curiosity about it. And then they want to see if they can outdo themselves, and then they actually learn the multiplication table on the other end. So it sparks their interest, let's say. And then we get to, you know, they get to live with that for the rest of their life, which is great. Another example about gamifying it to spark curiosity or learning in that, it might be, say, Monopoly. We play Monopoly, which has a lot of life's lessons in there. It's a, you know, essentially learn capitalism, investments versus just cash. You learn about managing money. You know, you could lose the game if you go bankrupt. I always have my children, usually the one who's weakest in addition, to be the banker. And they have to verify everyone's got it right. And that gives them a lot of practice. And it's a fun way to practice. I give them a pen and or a pencil and paper, so they can do anything that they're having a hard time doing in their head. They have to write it out. And we'll wait. We'll be patient. And it's just motivation. They get to see how learning math, is going to help them achieve something that's meaningful to them. And games are important to kids, so it works. Next, connecting interests with learning. This sparks curiosity. We align learning activities with what the children love, and this is really the philosophy of unschooling, right? We're interest-based, or child-led, interest-based learning. We're going to follow what the child really is into, and they are curious beings. They want to learn. That's what they do. They are literally little question askers, constantly, if you let them. That's good. That's great news for the unschooler. That means our philosophy is holding true, right? An example in our learning journey, or my children's learning journey, has been, let's go back to the chore stuff, because my children have recently been interested in chores again. At least one of them has. And he wants to go over and make some money because he wants to buy a lot of stuff. He wants to get some, I think, I don't know, Pokemon cards, or I know he wants candy. So we were going over, I don't even remember. I really can't remember. It was something with chores. And then I asked him, I said, you want to know how much money you can make? Oh, we were doing math. That's what we were doing. So we were going over math again. And I said, you know, you can use this stuff to figure out how much you're going to make. You know, use math. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I know you like have some savings goals. So we could actually like figure out how long it'll take you to save it. And he's like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, let me show you. And I pulled out a calculator, started trying to plug in the numbers. And I go, oh, man, you know, this would be way easier if I just pull out an Excel spreadsheet, which is a big calculator, right? And he saw me plug it all into Excel and make predictions. And he was like, whoa, mind blown. Like, whoa, you can use this to figure things out, predict the future. He was just like into it. So then I used the opportunity. I'm like, yeah, you want to see what this thing can do? Look at this. And I built I said, you can invest that money. Like, if you had that money, you could actually put it in an investment. Let's see, like, if you got like 10% interest every month, what $1 would turn into, like, over a year. His mind was blown. 10% per month is a high interest rate, but that's probably what the interest rate I'll give in the investment of dad. The bank of dad gives an investment like that. So they're going to take their spend money and choose to either spend it or invest it, and they can make it build over time, or they can just spend it, right? Kind of the Monopoly lesson. And when he saw what his money could turn into, he's like, can I have Excel? And we got him Excel. But before we did that, I actually asked him. I go, okay, you can get any video game you want. And video games are very important to this child. I said, you can get any video game you want. Or you can get Excel. Which one do you choose? And he said, I have to go Excel. I couldn't believe it. That is a big deal. Now, how many children out there are interested in learning Excel? Not too many, but this kid's pretty motivated right now. And it might just be the first pass through and he figures out what he wants and then he moves on and that's okay. Or maybe he really gets good at it, which would be a great skill. Either way, how many kids are like grabbing Excel sheets, right? I mean, only unschooling kids do this, or kids with the freedom to engage in their interests and see the value and stuff. That's why we want to spark this curiosity, because it leads to the possibilities, the curiosity. I want to see more. I want to learn more. I want to know more. Like, oh my gosh, the world is not as it seems. I think those opportunities are just gold. Next, I like to say, make it personal. Make it as close to them as possible. Okay. You got to connect dots for them. It's not going to be obvious to them. I know it seems obvious to us, but we have decades of experience living this life. What seems obvious isn't so obvious. I remember when my friend was taking his driving test and he was a little nervous, you know, the written test. In the United States, we do a written test. We have to pass before we can actually perform the driving test. I know that's crazy to hear if you've ever driven in the United States, because people just don't seem to follow those rules at all. Maybe better than most countries. Who knows? I've been to some countries that's pretty crazy. But I don't know. It seems those rules aren't really followed. Either way, off my soapbox. I remember he was really nervous about taking this test. And his mom says to him, just use common sense. And someone replied back to her. I think it was my mom. Well, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and it seems like common sense to us, but it might not be so common sense to him. It's all new. And I remember his mom going, oh, yeah, I guess that's right. And I remember thinking, and I heard that story, because I actually wasn't present when that happened. I heard that story years after he got his driver's license. And it was just a couple years after, but I remember thinking, like, yeah, I could connect the dots to that. I just go, yeah, I remember being real nervous about that test as well, and how intuitive it is now that I'm a couple years in. Your kids don't have any of those connections. They don't. It's not personal to them. It's not relevant to them. So anything you can do to help with that will help fuel curiosity. Potentially, anyway. At least it's one of the strategies. An example is we did the World War II thing. And I always go back to the stuff we've done. And World War II has been very big lately. We studied that. And one of the ways I made it personal is talked about the industrial might of the United States when it entered the war. And how that was such a strength. And my city of Cleveland was one of those places that was a major contributor. You know, it's an industrial city. It still is to this day. And they gave them a little bit of pride. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, I see these steel factories. I see these other factories. I see the smokestacks and the big barges going up and down the river and in the lake, all that stuff filled with whatever, you know, industry stuff. And, you know, I guess it makes it real for him. I remember showing them pictures of my grandfathers and talking about how one was in the Army and one was in the Navy. And it just made it real. You know, these are real people. These are my grandma and grandpa. And they're like, oh, wow. And these people who fought in this, at least one of them did. The other one got out right before, the one who was in the Army. He was airborne, and everyone in his unit died. So he would have probably been dead. And instead, he got my grandmother pressured him to get out and marry her. Thank God he listened. The other one saw combat over in the South Pacific. And he was not a machinist. He worked down in the, I think it was a diesel mechanic or something. And then the other, I guess he had two titles back then. Two jobs. And every ship, he had two jobs. One is the one you were trained for. The other one is combat. So he was a gunner. And yeah, super crazy. So we talked a little bit about that. And it was like, and they're watching what their grandfathers went through, their forefathers went through. So made it as personal as we can. And that really made it real, you know? Real as it can be, anyway. We talked about me being in the Army. I was in the United States Army. And how, you know, and them watching war was like, you put yourself at risk like that? I don't want to glorify it by any means, because I really don't know if I want them in the Army. I want them in the Army, but, or military. It's going to be up to them, of course, but man, I'd rather be in myself. Anyways, moving on. Sometimes what it takes is giving them their own independence to be able to choose what they want to learn, what they want to do. Self-reliance blooms this independence, and learning then follows. They start to say, well, what, you know, they really get an ability to learn about their self and where their deficiencies are, where they excel. And that leads to more curiosity about where that might go, whether it is deficiency or something they're good at. Because when you're deficient, you go, oh, well, what do I need to do to get better? What do I need to know? Oh, that's interesting. Now I have three different options. That's, why don't I go with this option? Try that out. No, that didn't work. Let me try this one. You get to learn. And you get to learn new you get to learn new skills, everything. When you excel at something, you go, oh man, I'm really good at this. Well, why am I so good? What am I doing exactly? What else can I do to get better? Man, I'm killing it over here. You know, like that kind of thing. It's fun. Learning should be fun. I know I'm trying to think of a personal example where we give this independence. We try and give as much independence as possible. Our philosophy is have them learn as young as appropriate, essentially, which is usually as learn as early as possible. We believe that because we have a built-in safety net called parents that will jump in if it gets too rough. I'd rather have them learn hard financial lessons now. Like they spend all their money on a video game, or they didn't even got there, haven't even learned how to save yet, have to spend all their money on candy and learn that maybe they should tuck a little bit of away for future things that they might want, rather than spend it all, you know, and live paycheck to paycheck. Maybe have a savings goal, stuff like that. I'd rather have them learn that lesson now on candy, which is still incredibly impactful in their life, then when they get a family and children, or maybe they're on their own, right? But I always picture, like, gosh, they're with their family and they got children, and it's like, oh my gosh. And then they have to learn this lesson the hard way. No. I think we want to have them learn as early as possible with that. And we protect them from a lot of the consequences. I know that sounds counterintuitive. You think you'd want them to suffer all the consequences, but we do protect them. We want the minimal amount of consequence, or to learn the actual lesson. So we always say you can learn the easy way or the hard way. And we try and teach them. We give them a little bit of grace with what they do. And then they continue to mess up. We say, it sounds like you want to learn the hard way, and we're going to let you. You're going to learn this. And that way, you know, it sounds cruel at times, but I think it's the best way to love them. Allow them to fall flat on their face while you're there in your, while they're in your house, while you have influence, because they're going to need it. They're going to need you. They're going to need your influence to get back up. Either that, or they learn it when they're 18, out on their own for the first time, and they're surrounded by people who are very immature and making unwise decisions, and that's who they're going to for advice. Doesn't sound like a good plan to me. So, of course, as appropriate. You want the lessons as appropriate. So, we'll stop there. I think that covers pretty much everything I wanted to talk about. So, just in conclusion, curiosity is a compass that guides us towards lifelong learning. Anything we can do to spark that curiosity, answer those questions, and lead to more curiosity, I think is a good thing. And is in unschooling, that's, you know, you rely on that, right? Interest-based. It's child-led, interest-based. You rely on that curiosity. So any way we can, as parents, spark it and then provide tools to be able to learn the skills necessary or whatever they need to make it to get to the next level, if you want to call it that, that's our job, right? And we want to guide them too. We want to give them, we want them to learn on their own. We want them to respect what we say and take it seriously, but then at the same time, have the autonomy to make mistakes and learn that hard lesson so that way they self-correct. And it's a balance, guys. It's very, very difficult going through that right now. So with that, stay curious, stay unschooled, and stay away from the algebra nightmares. I'll catch you in the next episode. So here's where we roll up our sleeves and bring out the big guns. If you support our mission, then please leave a review. On Unschooled Unleashed, we are talking about using a radical approach to education in today's world, and the more 5-star reviews we have, the more people will feel comfortable with the ideas, strategies, and principles we discuss. It gives legitimacy to our message, and the podcast's algorithm prioritizes us so we can reach more people. You may even have your 5-star review read on our podcast. Before I let you go, I have to pause and say this from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Your presence here is the fuel that ignites this movement. I am incredibly moved that you trust in us enough to click play. You, my friends, are the caped heroes in this story, the guardians of your family's learning journey, and a beacon of hope for your community. Be bold. Do what you think is best for you and your family. Thanks again for tuning in and taking this courageous leap outside of the box for this educational revolution. Welcome to the front line.